Tampa MX Network production.
A cerebral and experienced look into the racing action from the week that was. This is Industry Seating with Jason Thomas. Presented by Pirelli Tires, Guts Racing, Plum Creek Funding, Pro Glow Wash, Works Connection, Bass Foundry, TL Speed Shop, Concept Coatings Design Co., Grandstone Boots, and Fly Racing.
Good morning. Welcome to the Industry Seating Podcast. Recording this a little bit later in the week than I would like to, but as a bonus, I'm going to do a little bit of a preview of what I think is going to happen in Birmingham since it is a Thursday morning that we're recording this. But again, thanks for everybody for listening. Want to thank the sponsors of this podcast, Pirelli Tires, Guts Racing, Plum Creek Funding, Pro Glow Wash, Concept Coatings Design Co., Works Connection, TL Speed Shop, Grantstone Boots, and Fly Racing. Thank you to all of them for being on board. And what a week it was. We were in Daytona, and I'd love to tell you that it was just beautiful, you know, blue skies and beach sunny weather in Daytona, but it was not. It was raining throughout the weekend. And to be fair, Friday was okay. It was really overcast and kind of gloomy, but at least it wasn't raining, so I'll take that. At least in the morning, I think it was, but it could have been a lot worse. We did get rain on Saturday afternoon, and for those people who didn't have really anywhere to hide from it, I'm sure they were miserable. I saw lots of people just absolutely soaked walking around in the rain, so I can certainly empathize with that, but we were all there for the race, of course, and at least it did us the favor of not raining during the racing at night, and it was pretty nice out at night. I don't remember being hot or cold or anything in between. I felt like it was pretty decent. So take what we can get after San Diego and after San Francisco and possibly what we're going to see this weekend in Birmingham. I'll take it. You know, it's compromise is okay, but my feet were not completely drenched. I wasn't walking around in a foot of mud. And having to have umbrellas and all that stuff at night. So small victories, we will take them. The 250 class is where we're going to start this podcast. And Vial wins. That was, I want to say it was surprising, but maybe it wasn't. You know, you look at the conditions, you look at the way that track was, really sandy, ruddy, not standard supercross. And I would say not even like your typical Daytona. It probably shouldn't be a shock because this is the way I think about it. You know, Vial is still learning supercross. You know, he's about a year and a half in to this project. Lots of learning and practice and acclimation to him for supercross. But this wasn't that. This wasn't Arlington. This wasn't Detroit. This wasn't what we're going to see in St. Louis or Foxborough, any of those. This was a hybrid sand, wet, half supercross track. So to see him look better than normal, that should not be a surprise. And you look at who he's racing against. He's racing against McAdoo, who his outdoor results have been questionable at best. Deegan, who had a huge crash earlier, right? And he's young. So I don't think he was really on his game per se. Daxton Bennick, he's three races into his supercross career. Max Anstey, who got a terrible start. Seth Hamaker has really never done much as far as consistently in supercross or motocross. Lots of speed, but that's about it. So I'm just trying to paint a picture that it's not unbelievable that he would be out there winning or be in the mix, especially in these conditions. And I don't want to detract from him. That's not the point here, and I hope it doesn't come across with that. I just think that we have to put it in context, and you know, I think he made comments after the race about, you know, he's ready now and he's got to die. Well, I don't know. We'll see. He made the same comment at Southwick last year to me on the podium that the championship starts now. Well, we didn't see much of anything after that. There was no continuation. There was no confirmation of that win. So I'm going to take it at face value, the riding, not so much to comment and just say, okay, good job. It's Daytona. It's supposed to be a weird event with different results than normal. And that's what we got. Now, if he comes out in Birmingham and he wins on a dry track, then I will shut up and I'll just say, hey, he's figured it out. He's arrived. If it's muddy again, and then he does, in the mud, I'm not going to try to take any more conclusion from that. All I'm saying with all this is just let's wait and see. I really like Tom. He's always been incredibly nice to me, whether here or in Europe. So I don't want it to be seen as a negative. It's just, I've seen people getting carried away online and on Twitter, and like, everybody just calm down and let's let the results do the talking, good or bad. I think piling in early, you know, as the saying goes, fools rush in. You know, I think let's just get more data. Let's let things unfold and let him, you know, tell us where he's at in his own progression, because he's getting better. Arlington's podium was a clear sign that he's improving. Let's just not let Daytona be the stamp it moment that I think some people, especially those inclined to MXGP, of course, that's their guy. He's a two-time MX2 champion. Let's just pump the brakes and let him show us, you know, that's all. That's all. If he is, great. Like, we need more stars, especially in the 250 class. And if they're international, all the better. It adds to the context of the series and the depth. And I think it's only going to bring in more fans, right? If he really emerges, you know, the fans from Europe that are kind of already there, but maybe not engaged because they don't have someone of theirs to really latch onto, I think this is that guy, right? He could be that Marvin Musquin type guy. So we'll see. Cameron McAdoo, I mentioned briefly, he's hanging in there, right? You look at his results, he's won three heat races so far, which is, I think, pretty telling about what he's capable of. The question will be, can he avoid the gigantic mistake that has plagued him throughout his career? And I don't know. I happen to be a huge Cameron McAdoo fan on and off the bike. If you look at his podium interviews, you can tell probably why I like him. He's so well-spoken, and I think he has a lot of perspective in life about racing. And, you know, racing's not everything. Yes, it's important. It's what these guys dedicate their lives to, but there's a lot going on outside of it. And the result on the racetrack doesn't always trump everything else that's going on in the world. And I think he realizes that. And I think he's had a lot of hard lessons. You know, he's been hurt a lot. He's had so much adversity. Think of how many times he's gotten hurt. I think that's given him perspective that nothing should be taken for granted. And when you're doing well, man, really, really soak it in and absorb it and try to be happy, because it's not always going to be this way. So we'll see what the championship brings for him. But I've been very impressed with his riding and his performance thus far. If you think about the Detroit first turn crash, and I know you could say this for a few guys, but if you take that out, there's a really strong chance that he has the red plate right now. You know, he's gone, 13-2-2. That's pretty damn good. And that first turn crash really had nothing to do with him. You know, Hamaker caught somebody's jersey and veered into everyone. So, yeah, I'm a big fan, and I'm a big proponent of Hamaker's chances and moving forward. Deegan, man, if you didn't see that practice crash, go back and watch it. That was scary. I happened to be watching Deegan randomly. I was in the press box waiting for Race Day Live. And I just happened to be watching to see if he was going to put a good lap in, because I saw he was pretty far down in the results and I knew it was coming, if that makes sense. Like, when you see anybody who doesn't have a good lap, you can bet they're going to be putting a heater lap in any second. So that's why I was watching him, and it just happened to be that moment where he stepped over the bars, and it was scary. You know, you look at a championship contender, a huge star of the sport. I know it's someone personally that, you know, Feld and interested entities are all like hoping he can be a breakout superstar in the sport, right? Because why not? He has this lineage. People inside and outside the sport all know that name, his YouTube presence. Like, all, there's lots of reasons to hope that he can really make good on any results. And to see him flying through the air or sans motorcycle is a scary thing. You know, to his credit, he got up. He rode off the track. He got fourth on the night. Wasn't his best effort by any means. I think he would appreciate that. And, you know, I think when speaking with his father, you know, Will Christian kind of asked him, like, what's the deal for tonight? And he's like, he's just not the same right now. You know, he doesn't have that fire and intensity. And that happens. If you look at, I only can look at my racing, but watching other riders too, you have a big crash like that, it just takes a little bit of the intensity off. You know, you can't have as much edge as you did because that crash in the back of your mind and he was hurting, he was sore. So your focus off of going as fast as you possibly can just gets a little dull. And I think that's what we saw in the race. You know, he didn't have that revving, wide open intensity that we're so used to seeing from him. And that's normal. That's very common after a big crash. So I would look for him to bounce back in a big way. We'll see what the weather brings again for Birmingham, but I don't think we've seen the last of Hayden Deegan this season. That's for damn sure. Max Anstey is the last rider to have a note on the 250 class. And I mean, the math, man. He's still got the red plate with 2, 6, 8 finishes. And if you told me anybody would have the red plate with finishes like that, I would laugh at you. It would be like Steve Mathis math, who, if you don't know, he's not very good at math. I give him a hard time all the time. He just really struggles in that area. He has lots of strengths, but math is not one of them. And that's what it looks like with Anstey. Like, it's just like, there's no way. Like, how could you possibly be in the points lead with results like that? But that's what this class has been. You look at the inconsistency and the variance and the first turn crashes and the crashes in general for everybody. Forkner goes out of the series. Like, that's what we have. And we have one of the tightest races ever, you know, in this 250 East through three rounds. Look at a guy like Pierce Brown. He's gone 5-5-5 and he's third in the series. That's pretty incredible to be able to say that. So I don't know where we go from here. Does Birmingham bring more of the same? Who knows, right? We go Birmingham and Indy. So we have two East Coast rounds in a row before we head to Seattle. I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't have any reason to think anything's going to clear up as of yet, but I do think over time, we're going to see the cream rise to the top. That's what we usually kind of happen. Usually what happens with series like this, and I think you're seeing it in the 450 class right now, Jet starting to emerge, Tomac's finding his footing, Webb's on the podium again. That's what I think we'll see in the 250 class, is things will start to clear up a bit, and we'll really see what's what over the next few weeks. I believe by like leaving St. Louis, which is March 30th, I believe, we're going to have a pretty clear idea of who the real contenders are, and it's going to just start to diverge a little bit. I could be wrong. Maybe we just get chaos all the way through, but that's kind of how I see this going. So we'll see if I'm right or wrong on that front, but that's typically how these series start to shake out. You know, the more data you get, the more racing that happens, it's really hard to just kind of mediocre. I'm trying to think of the right way to say this. Mediocre your way to prominence. Like, you have to step up, you have to win races, you have to be on the podium several times to kind of make it. And the mediocrity doesn't win out long term. So trust me, I know that one firsthand. I know that one all too well. You're just going to have to be really, really good if you want a chance at this title in the end. In this podcast, we do the power rankings. Most of you already know that by now. And a lot of these are going to be similar, but I changed a couple around. And I think it's with fairness. You know, we have results to kind of back that up. So we'll go through the power rankings, and then I will talk about Birmingham and what's going on there, what I expect, since we are, again, we're kind of late in the week. Before we do, let's thank the sponsors again: Pirelli Tires, Guts Racing. Check out all the great products they have there. Check out Pirelli Tires as well. MXGP kicks off this weekend, and you know what that means. That means Pirelli Tires are going to be out front. They are so prominent in MXGP racing, and I think for good reason. I believe they have the best motocross-specific tires on planet Earth. Guts Racing has seat covers, graphics for everything you could think of. Power sports, e-bikes, whatever you can come up with, they probably have something to put a sticker on it and make it look great. Plum Creek Funding, rates are not great. Rates are not great. Rates are not great. I'm trying to find a rhyme there. But some people don't have a choice. I have lots of realtor friends here in Boise, and they're still selling houses because other people don't have a choice when they want to buy. They can't wait anymore. And they're just going to have to find ways around it. But what you want to do is ask Zach, what's my best option? Should I do a 15-year loan? Should I put more down so I don't have to finance more? There's a lot of ways to kind of make the best of a bad situation, if that makes sense. So reach out to Zach. His number is 720-212-4685. Concept Coatings Design Co. I was speaking with Benji, the owner proprietor there, and he's headed back to Perth for a couple weeks. Right now, he is from Australia, but their business is continuing. He's got his team up and running, whether it's Cerakote, anodizing. If you need a place to pit out of, you want to make a trip to California and want to have a home base, they have a lot going on there. Laser engraving, all kinds of cool stuff. Trackside support. They are a full service shop there in Temecula, California. And if you do anything with them, you can save 10% using the promo code CONCEPT10. So check out them. Great company, great guy, very privileged and proud to be a part of their effort. That race shop in California, I think, is such a cool idea. Works Connection, they have brand new components for the Stark Varg. If you have that motorcycle, it's electric motorcycle. I got to ride it once in May of 2021, made the trip to Barcelona, but that's their latest offering, is all the upgrades for Stark. They have been launching all sorts of cool stuff for the 2024 Kawasaki. They have that brand new chain gauge that is really for every motorcycle, but they just keep coming out with new products, which is really cool. Promo code JT23 to save yourself some money over there. TL Speed Shop. You can go down to Wickenburg, Arizona, and what you want to do is fly into Phoenix. They can take care of the rest. It's a full service deal, one-stop shop for side-by-sides. Could be a corporate event, could be, you know, team building, could be a family vacation. They have it all, and they can custom build anything you want, right? You want to go wine tasting? Great. They can do that. You want to go to Sedona to check out, go sightseeing? Great. You want to go to Baja? Awesome. They have everything dialed, and this is what they do. They're experts in this field. So you can just pitch an idea, and they will do the rest. Really, really cool program they have based in Arizona. ProGlow Wash, Ryan got to see him at Arlington, and this is a company based in Shreveport, Louisiana. And they build a power sports formulated wash. And I always like to kind of compare it to what I used back in the day, which was Simple Green. Simple Green is, it's not built for really anything, right? It's just a soap that made it to the big, you know, big time because it can cover this wide gamut. Well, for us, for power sports people, why would you not use something that is formulated specifically for this? Dirt, hard to remove substances, chain lube, oils that sling off, like all that kind of stuff. That's what ProGlow is really going after. And that's why it's a part of this podcast. So they're motorsports minded people. They race cars, motorcycles, all sorts of things. So check out ProGlow Wash, great company, great people. Last but not least is Grandstone Boots, and thank you to them. They have me looking awesome. I'm going to actually post a picture of my newest sneakers today. They hooked me up, and I've been waiting for summer because these things have summer written all over them. But I'm going to post a picture today, so check that out on my Instagram. But Grandstone Boots has such a great product. And then last but not least, Fly Racing. We have all sorts of deals going on. We launched a brand new set of LE gear last weekend, the LE Light Legacy. And I thought it came off really well. It was weird timing with Alpine Stars having a very similar look that was not coordinated. These things happen. You know, we are all working in shrouds of secrecy behind the scenes on timing and availability and all these things. But it was definitely interesting how that all played out. But it was cool with Max Anstey running the red plate and having that gear on. That was fun. Unfortunately, Dean Wilson crashed and is out for the season with a broken scapula. So that's a bummer. But he was looking good until that crash. So heal up soon, Dino. So thank you to all for listening to the sponsors and check out those great companies. And without further ado, let's jump into these power rankings that we have set up. And at number 10, is going to be Malcolm Stewart. And why wouldn't he be? I don't, you know, and I mean that as why wouldn't he be 10th or worse? You know, he hasn't had a good season. He did get a top 10. I think that's maybe two top 10s in a row, but it's been a struggle, you know, for a guy that everybody was talking about coming into the season as far as pace and speed and momentum. We haven't seen any of that. A couple times, you know, the heat race in Arlington, it showed up. But honestly, that's about it. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know if it's motorcycle struggles or what. That's what I would probably point to. But We just need something here. And I guess you could argue we're seeing signs of life from that heat race I mentioned, from the top 10s. But I expect more. He's such a good rider. I just think and know he's capable of more for that. It's just been a really, really tough 2024 for the Rockstar Husqvarna 450 team. Number nine is Hunter Lawrence, and I'm wrong. He's not on here. I took him off. I apologize. I was looking at the wrong list there. Number nine is Justin Cooper. I was like wondering, like, why the hell did I put Hunter there? He crashed out and hurt his shoulder, but he's not on here. Number nine is Justin Cooper, and he's been great, man. If you look at ever since Anaheim 2, he really kind of broke out and was qualifying, you know, up at the front. Like, he's just kind of had it. He's leading that heat race at Daytona, and I like what I've seen. He's been impressive to me, better than I would have expected is the best way I could put it. I didn't have any real expectations at all. And so, you know, when you're working from a low bar, it's not that difficult to be impressive, but I like what I see. He doesn't seem scared of the moment. His starts are what we would expect from Justin Cooper. And yeah, so good for him. I don't know what this means for 2025. I think he has a one-year deal at Star, but he's certainly doing the things you would want to see for him to kind of get continuation on that program. And when you think about maybe Eli Tomac's back, maybe he's not, I don't know. But I think Justin Cooper's making a case for himself to stay on factory equipment anyway. Dylan Ferrandis back in the top 10, and that's where he needs to be. You know, it wasn't his fault in Arlington. Well, I guess it was. He crashed, but the bike was unable to kind of hold it together there from the crash. And he's been a solid top 10 guy. You look at every week, he's just been right there, you know. And you could argue, well, he needs to be on the podium. I don't really agree with that. I think he's doing what is asked of him. He's on a privateer effort. And being the top 10 week in and week out is more than most of these guys can say. So I like this. I think if he stays healthy, continues to build momentum, continues to get stronger, base fitness is improving, he's going to be a force to deal with outdoors. Now, I don't know if that means he can beat Jet or not, right? We know that is a tall order. He couldn't do it last summer, but he looks damn good. And I think it's been a really solid effort for Dylan Ferrandis and that privateer Phoenix Honda effort. Number seven is Jason Anderson, and he's 29 back of the championship now, which is, it's tough, right? I think the championship's probably over. I don't mean that in a derogatory way whatsoever. I'm just looking at the points and the odds and the way the statistics go. And that those comments I was making about how the 250 class typically starts to diverge and people start to kind of fall off the back a little bit. I think that's what's happening in the 450 class, you know, with Anderson, and there's a couple other guys that I'm going to get to that I think it's happening to them too. And this can happen fast. You know, it can be everyone's together. And then all of a sudden it's like, boom, there's just this separation and you don't know when it's coming. It can be a first turn crash that takes everybody down, excuse me. But when you see it, you kind of know it. And I think that's what we're getting. And the first one of this that I'm going to mention is Jason Anderson. So I'm not saying it's impossible for him to climb back into the championship, but I think personally it's probably over. Aaron Plessinger is number six, and he was really good until he crashed. He was moving forward. He was riding well. And then he has this huge get off in the section that was really the section of the night. You think about the track, the way it was, what mattered, what didn't. That quad was the whole race, the quad and the triple on that whole rhythm section. You were either great there, or if you're Dean Wilson, you're Aaron Plessinger, it meant your race and for Dino, his whole season. So I think AP is in this same thing now where the championship is likely over. You know, we were kind of counting him in because he had been worthy, but it's probably done now. You know, I don't think, and it's really been crashes. You know, Glendale, he was in such a great spot. And this weekend he was in a great spot and he crashes himself out of both of those scenarios. And you cannot do that. You can't. Like, it, this series is too unforgiving and the pressure at the front is too brutally oppressive to be anything but. That's just what it is. So both Anderson, AP, and the next rider, I think are all in the same spot. They're kind of on the outside looking in now, and that is Ken Roczen. You know, and this is the second week in a row where it's kind of been blah, you know. I'm not saying it's been awful. You know, a fifth place in this class is not awful. Don't get me wrong. But I have high expectations for Roczen, especially the way he looked at Glendale. You have to know that he's capable of winning. And when you see him get fifth and kind of get passed, but you know, by like Webb moves forward, guys are passing him to go forward. Yeah, you're not going to win a championship that way. And he knows that. You know, I'm not trying to take anything away from him or talk poorly on him. I'm just, if you're talking about a binary scenario where it's win the championship or not, the last two races have been really tough on that front. And now he's over a full race of points out. And the likelihood of coming back from 27 points out of the championship is not good. You know, when you have to pass a bunch of other guys who are kind of all hitting their stride. And I know that comment possibly flies in the face of what I was saying about Tomac being 17 down. But the difference is that Roczen has no momentum and the other guys are finding their footing and moving forward. So they're diverging where I thought Tomac was still hanging around, you know, and just simple math, 16 points or 17 points versus 27 points is a lot. Like it's a lot. So I think it's a little bit different than it was with Tomac being, I think it was maybe 17 down versus where it is now for Roczen, AP, and Anderson. Number four is Chase Sexton. He was better. There's no other way to say it. He was better. Now, is better where he was a year ago? Is it the same guy he needs to be to win this title? I would say probably not, which is okay. Like, that's not his fault. He did get injured. You know, and when I say it's not his fault, it's a binary thing, right? Like if you're, like I mentioned with Roczen, if the expectation is a championship, I guess it's all your fault. Crashing at the practice track is your fault, whatever. But, things happen, you know, it's not like he's just going slower the last couple of weeks because of his own inefficiencies. He's been dealing with a hand injury and he's been fighting through it. And I think he looked much better this past weekend, and I think he's going to get better from here. The question is, what does better look like? Is it enough to win races? Is it enough to climb back into this championship fight? I don't know. You know, that's up for him to decide. But I did like what I saw. It was a little bit of kind of just signs of life with him of like, okay, it's not over. Like, he's not out of this thing quite yet. He's just going to have to get hot late in the season if he wants a chance at this championship. Number three is Cooper Webb. And I moved him back from number two. And you know, why wouldn't I? He didn't win like he did in Arlington. And I thought it was kind of a blah race for him. It wasn't terrible. We know that. But, you know, it's a race where he's gotten six podiums. I think he really needed to send a statement to Jett and Tomac, and he didn't. You know, it wasn't a podium weekend. It wasn't a great effort by him, I don't think. It was just kind of okay. And I really didn't see a lot of intensity from him after qualifying practice. And I don't know if the weather or what, if it was just he needed a better start than that or what the situation was. I just think it was kind of a shrug your shoulders type night for Webb in a series where I think you're going to have to start performing, right? We're past halfway or around halfway, whatever it is. It's time to go. And I think Webb would agree with that. It's time to show up. There is no time to waste. There are no more weekends to kind of give up points anymore. And I don't think I'm speaking out of turn. I think he would probably agree with me. Number two is Eli Tomac. And really, for me, this was all about the quad. Now, you could argue that Tomac wasn't going to win anyway. I don't know if that's true or not. I understand the argument. I think it's valid. That's a valid case to take or make. But I don't know if it's true, and we'll never know. But I can tell you that without doing the quad, he was never going to win. Jett was way too fast, and he had the rest of the track dialed. Like, I think they were really close on the rest of the track, but Jett doing the quad and then that triple on, it was game over. Like, it was absolutely lights out. See ya. You have no chance of beating me if I'm going to nail this section. And, you know, it was so interesting that Eli saw it in the heat. He knew that Jett was doing it. Went back, they watched the film. I know they talked about it. He saw Sexton doing it early. I'm sure he knew Jet was probably doing it again and still chose to not do it. That is a really tough thing if you're going to win races to swallow. And you could argue, now on the other side of this coin, you could argue, and trust me, I love arguing. You all know that. You could argue that Tomac was like, I'm not going to take the risk. I'm going to let Jet make the key mistake here. He's going to throw it away. The track's going to break down. He's going to push too hard in deteriorating conditions and make the key mistake. That's a fair argument. It did not work in this scenario. And I would say that if you're waiting for Jet to make a mistake, if that is your strategy, your overarching strategy, you're probably going to lose more times than win. And the season has caught me out. I've been wrong. You look at the mistakes he made in San Francisco, bad starts, crashes, Anaheim 2, the crash in race 3. He's given us reason to think it can happen. The Arlington crash is late. Like, it's not, he's not impervious. He's had more crashes and mistakes this year than ever. But I still think over time, as a policy, if that is your approach and that's the way you're going to go about things, it's going to end up being a losing proposition more times than not. And it certainly was at Daytona. I think Tomac's probably kicking himself midweek on, man, I should have just jumped the damn thing. I did it late in the race. I did it when it was the toughest to do it. You know, why didn't I do it at the beginning? I think that's probably what's going through his head this week. But it's not going to be the last time he has to face that decision this season or moving forward. So we'll see how he handles it. But it was just, if you're ever looking for an internal struggle mentally for a rider, you don't have to look much further than Tomac and that quad to see that unfolding in real time. The crazy part to me is I didn't think the jump was that crazy. That's really poor phrasing by me. But if you like Cody Shock was doing it in the 250 class, I mean, there were guys doing that jump all day. Now it's easy for me to stay on the sidelines, but I'm not Eli Tomac. I don't have his talent. I'm not a million time winner, 51 wins or whatever in the 450 class. So I'm talking about a guy of Eli's skill and ability and talent. I think he could have done that jump very easily. And he proved that by doing it late in the race. So it's tough. It's a race where I think we could have had a huge battle and his unwillingness to jump that jump kind of stole that from us. And it stole any chance for him to win his eighth Daytona. Now, number one, shouldn't be any surprise at all. I mean, it's Jet. We know that, right? I'm running out of things to say. You know, it hasn't been a perfect season. It hasn't been a season without question marks. And San Diego's whole debacle was, yeah, I mean, that was not good, right? You can't be getting into altercations with other riders, especially a rider like Anderson who would love to take you out. You can't make many of the mistakes he's made. Crash twice within four laps in Arlington when you have the wind sewn up. Like, those are things that he will grow out of, in my opinion. So it hasn't been this season where you're like, yeah, he's infallible. He's can't touch him, can't beat him. Like, that's not what this has been. But Daytona showed us what he has under the hood. And if you're wondering where this goes, what this looks like long term, go back and watch Daytona main event or the heat race. That's what these guys are up against, and he's only getting better. He's still so early in his maturation process, mentally especially. Like, he has a lot to kind of figure out. He's still really young off the bike, and his skills on the bike are just I don't have the vocabulary for this. So if it sounds like I'm hyperbolic or exaggerating, I'm not. I'm being as real with you as I can. This kid is so far past the real deal. It's ridiculous. And he has the capability and the talent and the ability to make this series and sport very boring for a long time. And I don't want that. But man, this kid is a superstar now. And he might be the biggest superstar the sport's ever seen. I know that sounds like a lot. I know I'm assuming a lot. I'm just telling you what my eyes are relaying to my brain. And man, this kid is damn good. So that's it for the power rankings. Shifting a little bit to this coming weekend in Birmingham. Now, rain is in the forecast, and that's a bad thing, of course, but it's already been really wet. The dirt going in is going to be soft because they've been getting a ton of rain. So I don't know how muddy quote unquote muddy it is going in, but it is going to be on the softer side, is my opinion. And it's supposed to rain a lot starting tomorrow, which would be Friday. And then, you know, it's like over 50% chance of rain both days. So we'll see. I would bet we get a rain schedule, which would be less practice. They're going to try to cover the track as much as humanly possible. That would be my guess. And for good reason, why wouldn't they do that? And then I think we get maybe one or two practices. We don't start practice till like, you know, 12 or 1 in the afternoon, something like that. They'll narrow the window is really what I'm trying to spit out of possibility for rain, right? If typically the track's uncovered on Friday, and then if it rains Friday or Saturday, you're screwed. Well, now I think they'll cover it all the way till like noon on Saturday and cut that window way down. So now you have this, let's say, 8-hour window of rain possibility. And if you miss that window of hard rain, then we win, right? We have a dry race. If it rains after that, not much we can do. But the game here is lessening the odds of rainfall hitting that racetrack. And how you do that is just cutting down the time frame, the possible time. Now, covering the track doesn't solve everything. It still gets water in between the jumps. The start straightaway will typically still be wet, but it does help. If you've watched or paid attention over the years, you've seen how well how good Dirtworks has gotten at protecting these racetracks and saving them. So this is going to be another test. They're going to be up against it again this weekend. So we'll just have to see how that plays out. Now, who does well in the mud is it's been a mixed bag, right? Sexton, of course, killed it in San Francisco. Tomac did really well. But then, you know, Tomac got cleaned out by Christian Craig in San Diego and got a 10th or whatever he got. So I don't know. I don't know what to expect. You know, the guys that can ride the mud are pretty obvious. Ken Roczen's really good at it. Aaron Plessinger's really good at it. So they're probably hoping for rain. You know, to be fair, if you're on the outside of this championship looking in, like both of those two are, you're probably like running around with your Native American garb on hoping for rain. Because that's going to give you the best chance to grab a good result. Maybe Jet, Webb, these guys that are maybe not quite as good in the mud, have a tough one. We'll see. But you need help. You need the outlier event, outlier result to climb back into this thing. So if you are someone who is hoping to tighten this championship up again and you want this thing to go down to the wire, a mud race gives you the best opportunity at that, in my opinion. So that's one way to kind of look at this thing too. And I think in the 250 East class, I think that's Max Anstey. I think for him, having the red plate, a mud race is just what the doctor ordered. You know, you want to hang in there. You want the points lead. You want to be relevant in the title as long as possible. And I think mud is Max's best. It's his strength. It's his most divergent skill set. Like if you're looking for one thing he does better than everybody else, it's ride the mud. And so why wouldn't you want it to just be pouring rain on Saturday night? Now, if it's pouring rain, I'm going to be pissed because I'm going to be standing in water and mud again, and I don't necessarily want to do that. But I'm ready for whatever weather comes, and I'm sure all these other guys too, right? Even Jet, who his mud results haven't been great. You know, what did he get in San Francisco? 8th or something? And then San Diego, he actually rode really well, but a dead last start relegated him to 4th. I don't think he wants mud. You know, I think he would just want a dry race and let the best guys be the best guys, but he has to be ready. You have to prepare and just be ready for whatever comes because that's what championships are. So I don't think he's fearful of it. I think if anything, he's just going to be focused on the start with all, you know, all intent, right? Everything you've got, throw at the start of this thing because that's what's killed him in the first two mud races we've had this year was the start. Getting on that, you know, if the grate is dry or wet, have a setting for it. Keep your wits about you. Don't rev it too much, which is what I've been told has been the problem. That was the problem in San Diego is too high of RPM. So we'll see how they sort all this stuff out. But I think if it does rain, this is a critical round for Jet, like a huge round. You cannot give away 10 or 15 points and let everybody back in. Like you can't do that. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to lose the title because of it, but you want continuation. You want to reinforce what everybody saw in Daytona, extend the points lead again, and just take away all of that fire and excitement and you know, everybody's eyes will light up in the 450 class if Jet has a bad race and the championship tightens up again. It'll breathe new life into them. You do not want that. So that's just kind of how I see this weekend going. I do know that they are dumbing the track down a bit, and I don't know if dumbing down is the right word, so if it's inappropriate, I apologize. But they're going to make the jump smaller, make it less technical because of the soil and because of the expected weather. So there were people that were calling in San Francisco, like, why would you make the track so tough? Why are you doing that? Like, they're listening. They're going to make the track easier from the very beginning in Birmingham, so it is more, I guess, agreeable to inclement weather. So that's it for this week. A little Birmingham preview. MXGP is this weekend. That's going to be wild. I would highly recommend watching that. They're in Argentina. Everybody's healthy. Everybody's ready to rip. That series, those guys haul butt. If you don't watch that series and you want to watch guys go fast on motorcycles, check that out. MotoGP, first round this weekend. Where are they? Qatar, maybe? Something like that. Go check that out. I love MotoGP. It's not for everybody. I get it. It is racing on the street. But I think it's wildly entertaining to watch. It's tough to get into, just like MXGP, because the names are different. They're in a weird country you've probably never been to. The culture's different. The guys announcing are probably using a British accent. Like, I understand all that. But if you give it a chance, if you're willing to work past that stuff, the racing behind the scenes is phenomenal. So that's my advice, is just give it a chance. Just give it a shot. I think you'll agree in the end that it's worth the effort to get involved. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will talk to you after Birmingham. See you.